Welcome to Torah Timecha of the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Esther Shkap, and today we'll be learning Parashat Ekev. In this parasha, Moshe continues his major speech to the nation, those that will be crossing the Jordan River and settling Eretz Yisrael. He encourages the people that they need not fear engaging in wars of conquest, for Hashem will continue to guide them and assure their victory, just as he had in the battles of Amalek, Sihon, and Og. He reminds them of their miraculous journey of 40 years through the desert, where Hashem provided all of life's necessities. He details the wondrous blessing that will accrue to those faithful to the covenant through adherence to Hashem's laws. Preparing the people for a more natural existence that requires human initiative and labor, Moshe assures them that they are coming to a good land that can ensure their prosperity. He sings the praises of Eretz Yisrael. Hashem Elokecha mivi'echa el Eretz Tova, Eretz Nachle Maim, Einot v'tehomot yotzim bapik'a ubahar, Eretz Chita u'seora v'gefen u'te'ena v'rimon, Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash, Eretz Asher lo b'miskenot tochal ba'alechem, lo techsar kolba, Eretz Asher avaneha barzel, u'me'arereha tachtzov nechoshet. This is a good land, a land with plentiful water springs and aquifers that come out of the rivers as well as the mountains. A land of wheat and oats, of grapes and figs and pomegranate. A land of oils and honey. A land in which one will not have to eat bread rationed. Nothing is missing in this land. A land that has natural resources of iron and copper. But then he warns them against forgetting the God that enables them to take possession of the land and to prosper in it. He knows how readily success can corrupt and lead to arrogant self-satisfaction, where the people will assume that it was their labor, their ingenuity and creativity that will yield their wealth and security. Moshe warns them against the prideful boasting of Kochi ve'otzem yadi. It was my strength, it was my courage that yielded this wealth, this security. He reminds them that were it not for Hashem's promise to the forefathers, they would not have come so far, for they did not inherit it because they were that much better, because they were that much more virtuous than other peoples. Lo b'tzidkatcha u'b'yosher levavcha. And he then retells the story of the golden calf as an object lesson about how quickly a stiff-necked people reverted to vulgar idolatry. The parasha continues with admonishment to obey and cleave to Hashem, remembering that only God can ensure that they will continue to thrive and their work will continue to yield fruit, but only with divine assistance. He introduces the second parshiyah of Shema Yisrael, V'haya im shamoa tishme'u el mitzvotai, warning them not to take anything for granted. I would like to focus today on a passage in the early part of this parasha, where Moshe reminds the nation of the 40 years of the wilderness. V'zacharta et kol haderech asher holechacha Hashem Elokecha ze 40 shana b'midbar. God had led you here, don't forget, for 40 years in the desert, but he did it Leman anotcha, lenasotcha, ladat et asher bilvavecha, hatishmor mitzvotav imlo. He did this to oppress you, to test you, to know that which is hidden in your heart. Will you keep his laws or not? This verse implies that the trek through the desert was intended for some sort of a test to humble the people. The implication of a test to know what is in your heart seems to contradict Hashem's omniscience. Hashem knows our innermost thoughts and feelings and knows how we will respond to any challenge. The problem of a nisayon, of a test, has already been confronted when Hashem tested Avraham repeatedly to prove to Avraham himself and to the rest of the world what is Avraham's spiritual fortitude and why Hashem had chosen him. The Ketav VeKabbalah explains that this test, like all trials and tribulations, are not needed by an omniscient God. A test serves instead as a training course for the tested to build his resilience and sense of competence to withstand hardship and change, and in the process, foster a faithful relationship with an unseen provider in heaven. Accordingly, the trek in the wilderness was intended to actualize Am Yisrael's potential and purge their slave mentality and their horrific self-image and lack of confidence. But the Mefarshim ponder, how could Moshe deem the man, the manna, the bread from heaven from which Hashem miraculously nurtured and sustained us for 40 years, a bread of affliction that was supposed to oppress and humble us? Why does Moshe underscore not once, but three times, in verse 2, in verse 3, and again in verse 16 of the 8th chapter, that Hashem gave us man in order to humble us and in order to test us? A similar idea has already been expressed in the book of Shemot in the 16th chapter in the 4th verse, when Hashem declares, Hineni mamtir lachem lechem min ha-shamayim leman anasenu hayelech betorati imlo. I am about to rain down bread from the heavens to test him. Will he follow my Torah or not? There, Rashi explained that the test was whether the Israelites would keep the restrictions commanded regarding the man, namely, that they can collect only enough for one day's consumption, and may not save any leftovers, and that they may not gather man on Shabbat. Ramban suggested then that the test was whether the Israelites would follow Hashem into the desert, where there is no natural source of food and water. Furthermore, eating man required adjustment to an unfamiliar food and to rationing of that food. Ibn Ezra insists that the man tested the mettle of the Israelites, who would need to forego any kind of security, relying solely on Hashem's gift, one day at a time. But in Parashat Ekev, Moshe Rabbeinu suggests that the man itself was instrumental in humbling and testing the Israelites. The man itself was a wondrous gift. It provided nutrition, and its pleasant taste was limited only by the consumer's imagination. Therefore, Sfono posits that the man, like the land of milk and honey, would test the mettle of Am Yisrael to see if they would continue to do Hashem's bidding when you do not need to toil and struggle for food and clothing. Given that the people were promised a blessed land where they would no longer have to ration their food, where poverty and hardship would be long forgotten memories, Would they forget that Hashem's hidden hand is providing prosperity and ease? Once they enter a fruitful land and begin to reap its bounty of grain and produce, and mine its hidden resources of iron and copper, when they build homes and amass flocks of cattle and sheep, and fill their coffers with gold and silver, will they become haughty and entitled? Therefore, Moshe warns, Hishamer lecha, pen tishkach et Hashem Elokecha. Watch yourself, lest you forget Hashem your God. He describes the all too common scenario of lapsed Jews living in countries where they are not persecuted and when they are no longer struggling with the shame of poverty. There, when they have so much, when they come to believe that they are entitled to all of this. Veram levavecha, veshachachta et Hashem Elokecha, hama'achilcha man bamidbar. So your hearts will grow haughty, and you will forget Hashem your God, the one that once fed you man in the desert. He could have been speaking to our generation, who do not have the excuse of previous generations who arrived in the United States and could not get a job if they wanted to keep Shabbat. Today, one can get a job. One can go to the university. One can go throughout society and amass all of the goods of this country and rise to the highest offices of power, and still keep Shabbat, and still eat only kosher. There are no more excuses. Today, Jews, both in Israel and in the diaspora, are being tested by their freedom and prosperity, which all too often lead to arrogance and a different kind of idolatry, one that worships Kochi ve'otzem yadi, one that worships self-reliance, one that worships money and the halls of power, and relies not on bitachon behashem, on trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but on false gods who will all too soon prove their falsehood. Too many Jews today worship at the altars of finance, a well-armed military, the promises of political allies, forgetting who really protects and provides for us.